This is a reading from Whispers from Eternity, a book of prayer demands by Paramahansa Yogananda. This is number 167. Teach us to consider no work more important than thy work. O Spirit, as no work is possible without borrowing from thee the power to perform it, so teach us to consider no work greater than thy spiritual work. Teach us to feel that, since no duty is possible without thee, so no duty is more important than our duty to thee. And teach us to love thee above everything, for we cannot live or love anything or anybody without thy life, thy love. I'll add my blessings to David's, to certainly all mothers everywhere, but as he said so beautifully, to that divine mother in each of us, that feminine quality that comes to us as we move towards this perfect balance, this place of perfect inner communion with the Lord, which is really what this reading is all about. This morning I woke up and I was writing an email. I often do this on holidays. I sort of bunch even the most important of emails, which I think Mother's Day is. It must have come about as some kind of a Hallmark card holiday. But somehow it's very deep and touching and a beautiful reminder. I think it serves a wonderful purpose. So knowing that were I to wait to write each of the mothers in my life a note, they might get their Mother's Day notes by Christmas or perhaps next Easter, I decided that I better write everyone one email. I've done it before. I just ask them to remember that as I'm writing, I'm holding each of them, just holding each of them up in my mind's eye and offering prayers of gratitude and love to each of them. Somehow I think it works. Nobody's ever complained yet, but it's true. The essence of it and the feeling of it is true. So this morning, I was just honoring so many beautiful women in my life who are mothers, real, in this material plane, mothers. But as I was writing to them, what I realized is that being a mother, the way at least most women do it, what comes through most women as they have a child or children, and they've invited these souls in, whether they know that or not. Many people I was writing to this morning would not know that. They wouldn't think of it that way. But what gets awakened in us is that love, that place where our desire to serve the highest in somebody in the best possible way, without our even thinking about it, because we just open to it. It's like the best of probably all of the paths of yoga, certainly bhakti or devotional, karma or acting, or jnana and discriminating, just come together there without thought. The mind really would have nothing to do with it. But in that moment of wanting that love to be perfect, or of just opening to the flow of perfect love, they are inviting in and attuning themselves with exactly what Jesus is asking of Martha. He's saying this isn't simply an activity. You're not going to get it right by thinking it through. You can't order it and have all of the pieces fall into place. It's never really, what he's saying to her is, it's never really the action that we're doing. Somehow this is something mothers, I don't know if they know it, but it happens, not just intuitively, but energetically. Their desire to love is so great that this comes to them. And I had the realization that parenting is very often, and mothering, whichever, whether it comes from the mother or the father, carries us so far on this spiritual path. Again, whether we're aware of it or not. Because as I was saying, what Jesus was saying to Martha, saying to all of us, it doesn't really matter what the task is that we're doing. It doesn't matter whether we're somebody who's a secretary or a doctor, or whether we're at home and Jesus Christ himself just came for lunch. Pretty amazing little bit of great good karma there. What Jesus is saying is, it's not what you're doing. It's where your consciousness is. It's whether you can hold in that moment right attitude, which means, first of all, non-attachment. I mean, it means so much. It sets the bar so high. But that's where we have to look. But it means non-attachment. It means holding in as many moments as we can that we're not doing anything, that God himself is everything and is doing all of this through us. And it means that we realize our highest goal is to realize inner communion with the divine. And that's what he's saying to her. You don't need to get it all perfect with the vet. It's good if you do. Again, if I was serving Jesus, I'd certainly want it to be I'd want it to be the perfect meal. But the truth is, if we stayed attuned to God in that moment, if we kept our hearts open and our consciousness attuned to him, whether he's sitting in our living room or not, the food is pretty perfect. What comes through us and what manifests is pretty perfect. And if we don't hold that, we might get some good karma out of it. We might be doing what we refer to every week in our festival as lower acts of goodwill. They're good. What's happening is good. It's great that Martha wanted in her mind to prepare a good meal for Jesus. And she would probably get some good karma from doing that. But she will not be able to realize the divine by doing that. And again, if we open our hearts to it, then whatever we're doing, whatever God has given us to do in this incarnation, our job is always to be attuning our consciousness to that will, attuning our consciousness to that infinite consciousness that lives in the world of infinite possibility. Because really, many things that are asked of us, not everything, of course, but many things I've come to see have been humanly impossible, and yet they happen. I was reminded of several things as I was going through this reading, but when I first moved into the community here, because I'm not only a big karma yogi, not in the purest sense yet, but in the world, I do a lot by acting, and also because of how restless I was, I'm sure. I immediately moved into a position of doing a lot, and part of that was that I would be responsible for many of the big events that we hold here over the year. We do a lot of big events, I don't know how many. Often they involve cooking meals for 100 or 120 people, serving those meals, making everything look beautiful. And I don't know how long it went on, but and certainly there are still vestiges of it today. But with God's grace, nothing like it was then. I always felt that I had to be on top of every single detail, no matter who else might be responsible. I was never really making everything look beautiful. I was never responsible for table settings, but I was overlooking it all. And I was, let's say, anxiously fastidious. I'm being kind to myself. And often I was working alongside of Raghu, who many of you may know. Raghu, I want you all to know, he's a dear friend. He's a brother. I moved here. He had been living in Palo Alto for years before me and on the path for many years before then. But it would be hard to imagine two people moving in different ways in the world than Raghu and I. I would be, oh, this is May. Let me be planning a menu for Christmas. Who's going to set the table for Christmas? What will the color scheme be? Raghu was sort of, you know, gee, it's December 20th, Christmas is in a few days. Let's get to it. Well, that made me crazy. I was the new kid on the block, so I wasn't sure what to do with it. But you know, as the years went by, and honestly, it took years, I began to see that Raghu was accomplishing as much as I was, that whatever he was asked to do, it happened beautifully. And Raghu could have been one of many people, and I could have been one of many people, souls, because my sense that I had to anxiously pay attention to the details, and his more often knowing. He had a greater awareness at that time. Not that we don't have to act. Of course we need to act, and I'll come back to that in a moment. But that God was acting through him, and as long as he was being responsible and aware and willing and opening himself for that seva, that energy to flow through him, that grace comes in. And it happens, and just like the chant that Tandava chose for before we started service today, do not dry the ocean of my love with the fires of my desires, with the fires of my restlessness. It's such a beautiful phrase, because when our personal desires and that restlessness, Swamiji, those beautiful words, restless preoccupation. Boy, I just know it so well. It gets right in the way of grace descending. It gets right in the way of God being able to help draw our own energy up. It's so ego-centered, ego so constrictive. It really takes us away from allowing inspiration to flow, God's love to flow. They can't both be there in the same moment. So the more that we begin to deal and move from a place of restless preoccupation to peaceful absorption in the task, the better we are. Now, we are masters, disciples, at least those of us who have taken discipleship and dedicated ourselves to this path. And both Yogananda and Swami Kriyananda, everybody knows this, they manifested a lot in this world. They were doers, and so are we. That's what's been asked of us. So our question as disciples of this master in this particular ray is to say to ourselves, how can we be the closest to God as we serve? Because the truth is, most of us spend much more time during the day serving than we do sitting in meditation. If we could just always sit and meditate, if that's who we were, well, then we'd always be remembering God. We'd be remembering that God is everything. We'd be remembering that we're being used as channels, as instruments to do his work, but that we're not the director of it. We're not even the actor. God is acting through us. We would remember that. And we have to find our way back there because most of us are very busy. So we have to really find those ways to bring God into our service, which is just what Jesus was saying to Martha. It's not that you're cooking that's bad. It's not that you have a desire to make a great meal. But he said in no uncertain terms, Mary's doing that one thing that's needful. There was no qualification of that. It was an exacting comment that he made. So we have to pay attention to that. There's only one thing that we need to do, which is to raise our consciousness. That's what's being asked of us. In that in every moment and as many more moments practicing and practicing as we can remember to raise our consciousness, seek ye first the kingdom of God. We need to somehow remember that. The other date that this reading coincides with every year is what Ananda all over the world calls Rajasi Day. Rajasi Janakananda was the foremost disciple of Paramahansa Yogananda. And he was a great saint. I think the first time he met Master, at least close to the first, Master touched him and put him in samadhi, gave him an experience of samadhi for hours. And then when Rajasi came out of it, Master was sort of like, okay, now go to work. And, okay, I can work through you. And Janakananda served Master's work every moment of every day of his life after that. He was a great worker out in the world. He owned many businesses. He was very business savvy, financially savvy. He supported the work, Master's work, Self-Realization Fellowship, as it was just forming, bringing these teachings, spreading these teachings. He supported it in every way. He did the work in the world. He helped with the money. He meditated. He practiced Kriya. He went into samadhi. This is what Master is holding out in front of all of us. This is what's being offered to us with just a slight change of our consciousness. You know, many years ago, I heard Anandi referred to a movie that I had seen. I don't remember. It's a documentary, actually, when it came out. But it's a documentary on the life of Mother Teresa. And it was narrated by Richard Attenborough. It was very poignant. It was very well done and profound. But Anandi referenced two stories in it. It was after I saw this that I went and watched it. The first was, you know, she was a teacher, and she loved teaching. She was a nun, but what she did was teach, and she loved that. And she went to Calcutta, and I believe she was already teaching there. And one day, Christ came to her, and he said to her, start to serve the poorest of the poor in this city. For anybody who's ever been to Calcutta, that's quite the task. But she didn't know how to do that. She had no idea. All she knew is that Christ came to her and asked her. And she immediately started doing it. First, she went out into the streets and tried to see if she could find children to teach. And we all know where that work went. I mean, hospitals and so many convents, and I don't know how many nuns and now men. I mean, so many people have joined her all over the world doing that work. And when she was asked about it later, she said, oh, I'm not doing this work because I love it. I'm doing this work because God asked me to do it. No doubt. Now again, if Jesus comes to you and appears to you or tells you in any of the numbers of ways that divine essence has of contacting us, it does get your attention. But we all need to be that ready for it. We all need to be that assuming that it's going to come. And I just want to tell one other story. Let me just finish that sentence. Because that is the way that God can come to us. The more open we are, the more assuming, the more practiced we are, that we're waiting for our divine instruction, the more likely we are to hear it when it comes. The other story in that documentary that Anandi spoke about was Mother Teresa had the inspiration, this is many years ago now, that she was to go to Beirut and serve. And this was, there was so much war going on there. She got on a plane and she flew to Beirut, and the officials are saying to her, you can't come to Beirut, there's war, we can't let you, you're risking your life, you'd be risking a lot of lives. And she said, I have to come, I have to serve. And they're saying, you cannot until there's a peace agreement, or not a peace agreement, but an agreement to put down weapons for some period of time, I'm blocking on what that's called. And Mother Teresa just looked at these people, literally at the border, and she said, oh, it's going to happen, I'll be here tomorrow. And she said to them, Jesus told me to come here, just like that. And that night, out of the blue, there's this big news announcement that there's a ceasefire, and Mother Teresa just walked in. I mean, totally at peace and ease. But here's the story I want to tell. There's an image of her. She's in this home for children. She's just working with these children who, in this war-torn poverty, people are dying of starvation. We've all seen those images. And she's at this, not a sink, but a faucet, with this big jug to fill up with water to carry to the hospital. And she's standing there, and the water that's coming out of the faucet just going drip, drip, drip. You see, it's going to take hours, hours. She's just there. She's just doing what she's doing, perfectly connected to God. Didn't matter to her how long it took. Didn't matter to her what the Border Patrol thought. She wasn't doing those things. She was doing them, of course. She was listening. She was attuned to God. She was waiting for that connection to occur where what she was doing was serving God. What she was doing was standing perfectly still with raised consciousness. It's so beautiful watching it. It's a perfect current day and age depiction of what Jesus was trying to say to Martha. You're worried and troubled. Your only job in life is to raise your consciousness until our consciousness becomes one. Yesterday we had a retreat here in our temple, and we showed a video of Swami Kriyananda talking and teaching for a half hour. Beautiful, inspiring video. But he walked us through the paths of yoga, jnana, bhakti, karma yoga. And of course, I'm not going to try and share everything that he did, but he makes the point at the end of the video that what oneness with God means is an absolute perfection in all of those paths. It means standing still as the perfect jnana yogi, one who's discriminating, as the perfect bhakti yogi, one whose heart is open to God, filled with God's love, sharing God's love everywhere in the world, and the karma yogi, who's acting with the perfect understanding, the perfect karma yogi. God is acting through me. God is everything. Until you get so still with that, so realized in the moment, which takes huge practice. When Swamiji speaks about this in his commentary, not this one, but an expanded commentary, he says, what's being asked of you, of all of us, is Herculean. He uses that word. No doubt, this is hard. But when those moments come and you're perfectly still, you've transcended the acting. You are in love. You cannot be a perfect karma yogi. You can't be doing seva or service, which was the affirmation for today, perfectly, unless your service is balanced with bhakti, with complete devotion, unless it's a discriminating action. We can't otherwise, we just become restless. That's what happens. He showed us so beautifully. He was in it. He looked so beautiful. You could feel it, that place of perfect balance where all of these ways of serving are stilled. They're perfectly stilled because we realize, I'm using that word consciously, that it's all God who's discriminating, who's thinking, who's loving, who's acting. There's nothing for us to do but be still and know that I am. That is what's being asked for here. We need to figure out, we need to listen and hear, how is God trying to serve through me? Because when it comes in ways that are right for us by His will, that energy flows, His energy flows through us, and we forget ourselves. We move out of the way. How is He wanting to, Swamiji puts it, serve through us, work through us, play through us? It's so beautiful. Our job is to listen for that. Whether Jesus Himself comes into our living room or whether we live with the awareness that God is everywhere, whatever we're doing, let's make it an act, not just of serving God, but of remembering Smriti, that it's God serving God. It's God loving God. It's God guiding God, playing with God. The more we remind ourselves, whether we're sweeping a porch, making lunch for God himself, practicing medicine, putting on this whole day, it's all God's play. This is what Jesus is saying to Martha. Mary has that one needful thing, to know God.
If you're seeking freedom in a revolution, no, if you're seeking freedom, you won't find it there. For once the guns stop blazing, you'll find it amazing how the world can drag on just as before. And if you're seeking freedom in a marble mansion, no, if you're seeking freedom, you won't find it there. For even when it's sunny, you'll be counting money, keeping up that showcase, your face lined with care. And if you're seeking freedom on a throne of power, oh, if you're seeking freedom, you won't find it there. For though men all obey you, what if they betray you? Tense you'll be in waiting for foes everywhere. But if you're seeking freedom, cast away desires, why barter like a beggar? You've wealth everywhere. For never can you buy it, grasp and you deny it. Freedom can't be hoarded, it's free as the air. And if you're seeking freedom, seek it on the mountains, God's sunlight on your shoulders, the wind in your hair. For there's no one can hold you, boss about or mold you, once your heart is free, you'll be king everywhere. For there's no one can hold you, boss about or mold you, once your heart is free, you'll be king everywhere.